Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
And a long, hard road it's been. Welcome to The Long Haul, a new monthly radio program KMXT is rolling out in collaboration with the Kodiak History Museum. We're 2 years and counting in this pandemic, 2 years of waiting and watching as our community has struggled to navigate its way through pain, uncertainty, and disruption that COVID-19 has brought into our lives. It's been a long haul for all of us, and that's what's going to be our focus over the next few months as we sit down with some of our neighbors to talk about where we were, where we are, and where we're going in regard to making it through the pandemic. If you'd like to ask questions of our guests, please call the station at 486-3181 or send your questions to longhaul@kmxt.org during the show. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. If you'd like to participate in a future program, either call the station or send us an email. The Long Haul, stories from the pandemic in Kodiak. Here's today's host.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Lynn, and I am here with Mike today. And welcome to The Long Haul. This is where KMXT and the Kodiak History Museum take a moment to reflect where we've been and where we're going with this pandemic. Today, we are talking about the impacts of the pandemic and its supply chain issues on businesses in Kodiak, and I'll let our guests introduce themselves.
Hi, good morning. Mike Murray, manager of the Safeway operations in Kodiak.
Good morning. This is Dan Rohr, the owner of Subway here in town.
Morning, gentlemen. Thank you for coming back. You know, 2 years. It's almost been 2 years exactly since both of you were in here for the first time when we first started the lowdown, and we were first scrambling around trying to deal with the pandemic. So I imagine there's been a lot that's happened in the last 2 years for both of you personally and in regards to the businesses that you own or run. So let's start there, you know. Let's start with 2 years in, how has the pandemic directly affected you personally? Changes that you've had to cope with and had to change the way that you do business, the way you run your life. I mean, what really stands out for you, Mike?
Changes in personal life included nothing but work. Since that one day in March when things really started to melt down in 2020, it's been a nonstop process of workload. There's been good times, a few. We've been able to kind of go back to business as normal. But that would be the singular change in my lifestyle, and I give credit to my wife for bearing with me, because got to go to work again. It's the increased workload, both mentally and physically, has been probably what stands out the most.
And have you been able to? You look good.
I'm exhausted.
So it's a facade. Is that what you're saying? You've been able to kind of. What did you have to do to accommodate the extra work session? Did you have to do something to get yourself out of the I'm going to work every day
run? No, it's a commitment, one that has to be fulfilled. And I work with a very dedicated, hardworking team that is constantly evolving. And it's just part of being a team and leadership, really. You've got to be out there with your team and help them drive the efforts. That came at a personal cost of things not getting done around the house or downtime. Don't get me wrong, I've had a couple vacations, but the workload didn't stop. It just kind of stacked up, and you come back to it.
So are you starting to see a sense of getting back to normal now?
No, quite far from. Where any other time we've talked, it's we didn't have staffing issues that we were speaking about earlier and we might get into later on. It was more of just the ability to get what we need to take care of our community. That was the number one problem and obstacle. And then when we get it, it would take the work involved to get it to where it needed to be. Over the last couple of years, that's evolved into just not having enough people to deal with whatever it was that that we would get and be able to put it in place. That's been the better part. Escalating, I think this problem, at least in terms of staffing, has probably come on about a year ago.
You were a year into the pandemic when you started experiencing those problems.
Yeah, I can reflect having put it that way. The first year of these last 2 years were probably the best. We had a very energized staff ready to meet the demands of what needed to be done, and as things in the supply chain started to come back to life, it was a prideful thing to be a part of. It still is, but as those problems vary in different ways, it's the toll that it's taken on a very dedicated team to continue to come in day after day, week after week, and continue to do what we do. And we will do it, but it comes at a toll.
The excitement passed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun in the beginning, if you want to think of the last couple of years. Because at the time, you know, honestly, we were doing something that was, there was no playbook for it. We're calling the plays each and every day and hope that they were right. And oftentimes they were and sometimes they weren't. But we were doing everything that we could do. We're still doing everything that we could do. But when you compound the problems that we're dealing with now, it just kind of comes at that toll I speak of.
Dan, how about you? How's the pandemic affected you personally?
When you were asking, my first thought was, well, maybe it'd be easier to list the things that it hasn't impacted, right? A lot of what Mike said is very similar for me. I've always worked a lot, as has Mike, and I think I thought that I had probably worked as much as there wasn't necessarily a capacity to have to work more hours, and this last couple of years have certainly proved that wrong. I think I agree. I hadn't really thought of it in this terms, but the first year or so, it was exciting to... I mean, we've both been in our industries for a really long time. It kind of just becomes old hat, so to speak. And so having something totally new thrown at you, I think I took pride in, and I think my coworkers and my employees took pride in the fact that we stayed open. There were some days where we had to close simply because we didn't have enough people to keep both stores open. But, you know, when the vast majority of businesses around us were closed, for us to be able to be open, you know, we had zero spread amongst employees of COVID-19. And so, I mean, I think we took a lot of pride in having kept ourselves and our families safe during that time while still going to work every single day out in the public, interacting with hundreds and hundreds of people every single day. And then at a certain point, you know, that's not as much fun. The vast majority of us all ended up slowly but surely getting COVID from other sources. And you know, back in, was it January, that was a struggle, just being able to staff stores just because there were so many people in town. You know, when we had over 1,000 people that had tested and were currently positive, I mean, it just, you know, obviously those numbers trickled down into our businesses and made it really, really hard to keep our doors open. So anyways, yeah, it's been interesting. I would agree that staffing challenges currently are my biggest concern. I was fortunate to just be out of town for a week, got back last night, so it was nice to be gone and not think about Subway every moment of the day. We were able to do that because both stores were closed on Easter, so that was nice and employees got a break. But otherwise, when I'm in town, the first thing I do every single morning when I wake up, if I haven't already been woken up by it, is check my cell phone not to see anything other than who's trying to call in sick for today, what shift crisis do we have to cover in one of the two stores today. I will feel like things have changed when that's not the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, is to check and see, oh my, what crisis do I have to try to figure out how to unravel today? If that makes sense.
I saw Mike nodding his head as you were saying that.
Yeah, so agreed. I have a form of communication through email that that when I wake up in the morning, just tell me what's going on, what do I need to know right out of the gate. And to Dan's point, there are things, time-bound things, that have to be done each and every day, but that gets knocked off the table by the crisis of the moment. And I can completely relate. Do I have staff in a department to be able to operate a department? And if I don't, it's not really an option for me not to do that. I just have to put more work on somebody else to maintain operations. But that's a stressful time, and I can relate when we step aside and we don't get off the island. I did it as recently as January, and I literally just punched out. But within 3 or 4 days of having to return to work, it's like trying to catch up mentally on all the things that I would face. And interestingly, it was January. I had no idea what was going on in Kodiak. My wife and I were blessed to be on a cruise and kind of off the grid a little bit. But when I came back to life on the grid, it was like, well, I've got to get home. I've got to get there. And it's, I can relate a lot to how Dan phrased that.
So you missed the 65 degree day too.
No, I was here for that.
Oh, you were there for that.
I was here for that.
I do have to shout out to my coworkers. When I'm gone, like I was just gone on a trip, they are amazing about not reaching out to me. We have done a good job of when somebody at work can take a break, we don't bother them. We try to let them actually have their break. My wife says that I do very well with decompressing when I'm gone, but when I get within a day or so of coming back, she's like, you know, you can just see the stress building back up again because you know you've got to get right back into it. And so the other hard part has been this last year is over this last year, I've lost a number of really, really great coworkers. Not for any other reason, like there's nothing wrong between us. We're still good friends, et cetera, but they took other jobs in a lot of cases that pay actually less money than what they're making at Subway. But, just for a change in the stress level, you know, jobs that guarantee I only have to work, you know, these 6 hours Monday through Friday or whatever, you know, very scheduled, no risk of getting called in for other shifts, no risk of me calling and saying, hey, can you bail me out again? I know for my coworkers, we've started implementing a deal where I pay them, if I call them in at the last minute to help people out, I pay them an extra $5 an hour for that time. That seems crazy to me in some regards, but that's what we had. I felt like I had to do something to help out my employees that keep stepping up to the plate again and again and again. And I got some high school students that, I mean, I couldn't have survived the last 2 years without their help, and they're going to school full time.
Right.
Are
you seeing the same thing Mike's seeing, though, in regards to, like, it not getting better?
Yeah, I just was talking to somebody from Subway Corporate this morning saying, I'm looking at the summer going, I don't know how I'm going to do it. We've already been busy. There's obviously, everybody's aware, there's numerous restaurants in town that have shut down or have substantially modified hours. And McDonald's going through a massive remodel, which will be really great to see when it's done. All those things impact us. I was telling Mike and you guys before, you know, we've got a couple hundred kids going to be on island this weekend, and that impacts both Mike and I because those kids go charging into Safeway, you know, show up with a bus full of 40 kids, and they all come in the door at once trying to find stuff, or they all walk into Subway all at once. And that's great for sales. You know, the retail side of us goes, oh, this is, you know, we want those sales. That's exciting. And then we go, oh, man. I actually got to do all the work to get them out the door too. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're both totally related. You're almost synonymous with your with Safeway and with Subway in town. And I've seen both of you doing a lot more customer service personally than I think I remember. I mean, Dan, you've always been in Subway working behind the counter since I think it opened.
Yeah, that's the part of my job I like. Like, if I had to choose, I enjoy the customer interaction. I would much prefer that rather than sitting behind a desk. One of the things I've always respected about Mike is he's always out there I mean, even pre-pandemic, you're doing it a whole lot more now probably, but pre-pandemic, he was always out there running a register when they got busy. And I like seeing that. I think that's one of the neat parts about Kodiak is you have business owners and business managers right in there providing customer service right along with their coworkers, so, and their teams. So I actually really like that about
it. Well, take off the work half for a second though, and tell me about your, you know, you personally, if you're not consumed by work, what happened in the times that you're not at work? I mean, you're a busy guy. You have a lot of connections in the community. You do a lot of other things. How are you able to navigate the 2 years of that, your outside work life?
I don't know. I got back involved with the Christian School Board and things like that to try to help them through COVID. And so in some regards, it's considerably busier, I suppose. But I don't know. A long time ago, I decided to not really separate like volunteer life from work life. It's just life. I don't know. Like people ask me, how many hours a week do you work? And I'm like, I don't know, a bunch. I'm in a situation where I don't have to keep track of my hours. And so, I don't know, a lot of my hobbies are synonymous with work. Like a lot of people would probably look at what I would consider my hobbies and say that seems a lot like work. But anyways, I don't know. I don't quite know how to answer that question. So maybe if Mike answers it, then I can go, oh, that's how I feel about it.
Do you have a life outside of work?
I absolutely do. Sure. Not as much as I used to. And I enjoy spending time with my wife and when the kids, the grandkids can come and visit. I don't get to Anchorage as much as I used to because of work, but have a life outside. Love working in the yard, which my wife is doing a lot of that work right now. Fair enough to say when I get home at the end of the day, I'm pretty beat. And then when I get that one day off a week, I'm pretty beat. And it's not supposed to be work related, but on that one day off of work, I'm still tuned in and technically trying to get caught up. But if there's been one big sacrifice in my household, it's been the impact that I've been able to spend with Pam and with the grandkids when they come and visit. And they're going to be coming down as they always do for Crab Festival. And I feel bad that I'm not going to be able to spend the time or the quality of time. I'll do it. I'll squeeze in whatever I have to. It just means a little bit less sleep and maybe coming in just a little bit less early than I normally would, but absolutely have to maintain a life outside of work. Yeah. And I'm working diligently to not let that go.
I try to protect my evenings. There's evenings that I work, but there's I with having younger kids, I mean, they're getting older now, but always trying to be there at bedtimes and things of that nature, just because that's important to me, you know. For me, I like getting out on the water, I like jet skiing. But I do, my hobbies tend to be things that if I had to leave so that I can go deal with a crisis at Subway, like I don't four wheel often, like to go to Saltry, for example, because that's harder in my line of work versus if I'm right here around town, you know, and we're out in the boat. I mean, somebody could always drop me off at Mission Beach and I can go deal with something. So the ability to deal with it, even though my coworkers are good about not, you know, pestering me when I'm not at work, if they can at all avoid it, there's still times where it's not avoidable. So if that makes sense.
So you consider you're almost on call 24 hours a day.
Well, not 24 because the store's not open 24, yeah. Thankfully. If it was open,
I am.
I think you've got people in there 24/7.
We operate. We close 6 hours in the evening, but it's a 24/7 operation, and it can be anything from refrigeration to critical staffing to just in the need of direction. And I've always coached my staff. A phrase that was I heard many, many years ago in my career when I was working for somebody else, it was Joe Gulley, had shared with me, don't you, when I was working for him, he said, don't you call me at home unless there's a gun to your head or the store's on fire. That's when you call me, meaning deal with it. And like Dan, I have a very dedicated crew that will do all to respect that when I'm out of the store, but I've always shared with them, if there's something I can do in 5 minutes that will save you an hour, then that's my job, and you have to call me. It wasn't, I think it was either late last week, forgive me for losing track of the time, or early this week, I get that phone call at 5 o'clock in the morning, something needed to be dealt with, and had to put the jeans on and get in there and take care of it, and then come home and shower up for the day.
Yeah, I've always felt very fortunate that I'm not in Mike's shoes, where there's people there all the time. Subway would like to see me open a lot longer hours, and you know, we're closing currently downtown at 9 and at Walmart at 8. The truth of the matter is there's plenty of business volume there to be open considerably longer hours. I just don't have the staff to do it. So when I look at that, it just feels like if I do open those additional hours, which would make business sense, for me personally, it risks just impacting my home life and my coworkers' home lives even more than what work currently is. And obviously work always impacts our lives. I mean, it's a significant portion of our time every week, you know, for all of us. So.
Well, before we went on the air, though, you made an interesting comment that you like to be only open 6 days a week, but you can't do that.
Sure. I was just laughing that Chick-fil-A looks like the smartest people in the room with the whole being closed every Sunday. You know, you take one day of the week, it's a guaranteed day off for everybody, barring like an equipment malfunction or something of that nature. And then everybody has that to look forward to. And the truth of the matter is especially in an economy like Kodiak, our customers adjust their habits. And anyways, so it's just interesting. A lot of restaurants in town are closed a day of the week already. For some reason, a lot of businesses in town in general have picked Monday as there's, you know, they'll be closed Sunday, Monday. And so I think some people deal with it that way.
We all are pretty much aware of what went on for the last couple of years in regards to how you had to change what you were doing, but to put up guards, you know, to mask people, different hours. We know that you had to make significant changes throughout the workplace once things started really rolling a couple of years ago. But what are we doing now? I mean, how has your workplace changed, and where do you see it going in the future? I mean, are we at a point now where masks aren't required in Safeway anymore? The guards are still up, as I recall.
Yeah, they are. We still do sanitation efforts often, not as regimented as we did even in January this year. We maintain those aspects. We still do a health screening procedure that I believe is going to be going away, meaning a temperature check and get checked off that you're okay, you're not ill. We had really difficult protocols all through the whole pandemic that if a person became ill, we had to go into a protocol to make sure that we were doing the right thing, working together as a team inside the store and outside the store. And that protocol became brutal, causing us at one point during the pandemic to our deli food service department, we literally had to shut it down to just basic self-service operations. Recently in January, I had altered the operating hours of the liquor operations at the downtown store and the main store. But that was then. Now, personally, if you were to ask me that personally, I'd say I'm done with COVID. It's time to move on to other topics and other issues. It's still real out there, but I don't think it's the dominating topic that drives the business. That's why personally I say it's over with. Let's deal with the problems that are real and not be constrained by the rules that we were operating underneath. But to answer your question, I think everything that we've gone through in the last 2 years, what insight I do have in operation, and then personally, they are drastically diminishing to where we can just deal with work-related issues, not COVID-related issues.
I would agree with that. I think one of the things that's nice for us is for our business is to not, and I'm sure Mike would agree, is not having to feel like you have to be the mask police has been super nice this last month or so. We had a lot of pressure from Subway to really challenge people that, you know, to address people that weren't wearing masks, et cetera, et cetera. And I just felt like from day one, you know, you've got people that are going to fight some of those things. And I encourage my coworkers, I don't want to fight with my customers. You know, everybody has different opinions about things. I don't want to have a political debate about these things when I'm trying to make you a sandwich. Like, so the ability to, you know, sure, we've got lots of customers that still come in wearing masks, and that's fine. I've got some employees that's, you know, some days choose to wear them, some days choose to not. It's totally up to them on what they want to do. I respect that, encourage that. And so it's nice to be able to be in a situation where we can encourage our coworkers or our customers to do what they feel is best for their, you know, medical needs or their concerns, versus having it dictated to us, whether it be from a corporate office or, you know, from just another party. And like I said, not having to feel like I have to police that is certainly a load off for me.
So the COVID, dealing with the pandemic, maybe we're getting through that portion, but that's still part of the reason we're experiencing some of these supply chain problems. I mean, in addition to a lot of other things. So Lynn, we can move into questions about how the supply chain issues are affecting you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So would you agree that the supply chain is broken in regards to your business? Generally speaking, we all have been to Safeway or other places and see a lot of empty shelves or have to adjust our grocery.
I don't know that broken is the right word for it. Okay. And I'm not in a position to really speak to supply chain issues because I'm at the very, very tail end. Mm-hmm. Of a massive operation from farmer or producer to literally where it gets to the shelf is Danfer's ingredients. But I can say it's not working right. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are issues. Dan and I were talking before we came online of a commonality and share with everybody else of employment, staffing issues. If I'm dealing with it, if Dan is dealing with it, if we see the hiring signs up and down, any type of business, retail, non-retail, that has to go all the way back to the initial source of any supply chain and all the entities in between. And so it's not functioning right. So maybe therefore it is broken. A concern I have as an operator and personally is, as fragile as it is, when it's fragile, any little ripple can make it worse. And if we have a ripple from a healthy position, you don't feel it as bad. And I would be concerned, I am concerned as an operator and personally, that as unhealthy as it is right now, if it were to cough, it would radiate very, very quickly.
Yeah, I would be hesitant to say that it's broken, only that it just, the supply chain is what it is. I look at it and go, the United States has had an extremely efficient supply chain. The fact that a tomato, for example, can go from being picked in a field in California to being served in a Subway in Kodiak, Alaska, thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away in basically 8 days. I mean, that's crazy to think about. We've literally, on our produce side of things, have timed it to our lettuce being, because lettuce is an item that's pre-sliced for us, that lettuce gets picked in a field, 3 hours later it's being processed. As it's coming off, we've shifted every little piece of time out of the supply chain that we can. 3 hours after, it's on a truck headed to Tacoma. It's all timed just perfectly, okay? And so that's on a very small scale with just lettuce at Subway. But it's that way through every product. Corporate America, I mean, the supply chain has gotten rid of like huge, massive warehouses that, I mean, not entirely, but all the time that stock sits in massive warehouses is lost margins on that product. Like, we want to efficiently move stuff through a supply chain. So any hiccup is the term I've been using. So Long Beach's crisis earlier this year with ships and shipping coming out of there, all of a sudden made it very, very, very difficult. And so let's go back to my lettuce example. We had a period of time where lettuce was difficult to get a hold of, and not because it wasn't grown in the field, but there was a little period where they had a hard time finding enough pickers to pick it. So that creates a hiccup in the supply chain. But then the Long Beach issue happened, and truckers were being paid cash bonuses by people to go pick up this load over here rather than the one that's scheduled over here. So all of a sudden my lettuce product that again has that 3 hour window, all of a sudden they're going, we can't even find a trucker to haul it to Tacoma for all of the Subways in Alaska. So I think those hiccups, due to staffing shortages, due to all kinds of different things, have the ripples of them, and we're at the end, so it's like when you crack a whip, the noise is from the very tail end of that whip, and we're at that. And so some days that can feel very
painful.
Yeah, there you go, to go with the whip analogy. So we were saying earlier, and ultimately I'm not the very, very end of it, because I go to Mike and buy his produce if I need to. So this last week we had an example of tomatoes. A ship was late coming in on the Monday. Ship got here 24 hours late due to, you know, outside of their control, weather in the Gulf. And so they got here a day late. That put strain on all of us. And then I got shorted tomatoes due to quality issues. And then the tomatoes I did get weren't of the greatest quality, so we didn't have nearly the quantity. So I immediately went and bought all of Mike's tomatoes. So then all of a sudden now he's got a tomato problem that he may or may not have had before I got there. So anyways, it just is interesting how it just, in a small town, how things can trickle around really, really quickly. But anyways, to your question, the supply chain is certainly stretched and challenged beyond anybody's imagination of what it would have been. But for me, it just all goes back to staffing. You know, you have whole factories that have to shut down sometimes for 5 or 6 days. I mean, that's unprecedented. And to try to catch that back up, I don't know what that looks like exactly. Or how long that'll be. And I kind of feel like it may just be my new normal for, you know, potentially years to come. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
The second time you were in 2 years ago, you were scrambling to find, you know, chicken, pork.
Anything. Bathroom tissue.
That was a big one. And that would go right with what you were talking about earlier, Dan, with all these extra people coming into town now. And with your tomatoes, of how much we have available at any given time. And if there's a shortage at any given time, the demand is way more than what's available, right? So how does that affect, one, what you have on the shelf now? According to, I think it's kind of a long-held idea that Alaska has 3 days' worth of food in Anchorage for the whole state. So without it getting replaced, you know, you were competing with other Safeways a couple of years ago for product. If that gets disrupted and we only are down to 1 day's supply, that makes things pretty challenging. But what don't we have? You know, according to some reports that I've seen, there's almost 20% to 30% shortage of goods available on grocery shelves now than there was a couple of years ago.
Well, the more shelf stable the product is, the more we can stay in supply. It's the perishable areas that we really struggle with. The dairy, the eggs. We had an egg situation that we're still dealing with right now. So anything in the dairy, the fresh meat, poultry, anything fresh is the biggest struggles we're having, be it produce, be it meat items in the deli, because time frames are much more consolidated than a shelf-stable item. You can make that stuff all day long and keep it in the warehouse within its shelf date and get it out to a store and it can stay. Your analogy of what we were doing a couple of years ago in March, and the answer to your question, how much food do we have on this island? Very, very little. That was a real life glimpse of how fragile we are as a society. There's only so much. I can tell you the dollar value of what we have in the store and how many days mathematically that would last us, but that takes it right down to the last Q-tip in the store. People don't eat Q-tips. When that first meltdown in March of 2020 occurred, within days I could walk the store as I was every day and tell you the things that we don't need to be carrying, we don't need to be selling, and that was all the items that were left over. Everything that was gone is what people wanted. It's scary to think how little sustained amount of food that's on this island, and we're not alone. That would be for a city of Anchorage, or even worse, I think, in a more densely populated area, it's within days, if not hours. If the demand is right now, it's gone, and hopefully we never have to face those situations.
I think one of the things I appreciate about living in Kodiak is, okay, so with that reality, and it's that reality is made worse by when people feel that or have a sense that there might be scarcity, they go and buy everything. So I don't have to worry about that as much with Subway, because you're not going to hoard Subway sandwiches because, you know, you buy them to eat right now. But non-perishable items, you know, there are times when people are concerned, and so then they go buy extra. And I'm sure all of us could say there was periods of time where we had way more paper products in our house than we ever would have thought we would have, just because we were like, oh no, what if we run out of these things? The beauty of Kodiak that I appreciate is, as I've thought about it through the years, is, you know, one fishing boat can go catch enough fish this afternoon to feed our whole community. Now, I may not like the type of fish they catch, but I'm not going to starve to death. And I think about, if you're in Fairbanks, for example, or worse, let's say you're somewhere in the Midwest and you don't have access to the ocean, you don't have access to natural food supplies. Again, I'd probably get super sick of eating pollock really, really quick, right? And I wouldn't probably choose to try to fillet a pollock normally. But again, it, you know, in those really horrible, you know, people bring it up in regards to tsunamis and, you know, food safety and things of that nature. But it that's always been encouraging to me that we live in a fishing community where that could be dealt with. Again, that'd be extreme worst case scenario. But I know some people, when they hear us talk about how little volume there is on the shelf, immediately go towards being a little concerned. And personally, for my own family, that's where I felt like there's that safety of being able to deal with
I
that.
Absolutely agree. Yeah. I've always felt if anything were to really, really go bad, I know that I can feed my family. It rains all the time. There's water. And I can build a fire.
Yep.
And I couldn't do that maybe in Midtown Anchorage or Seattle or any other place.
Right. Have you been affected, Dan, on the product that you're able to put out? Have you ever, like, had to, I mean, your menu's pretty standard, but.
Yeah. There's been challenges across every, so for example, soups. So we went through a period of time where there just wasn't soup available for us. Frito-Lay chips, weirdly, in the bag size that we get, all of a sudden became a massive problem. We're not quite out of that yet. We're getting closer, but we went from having 12 types of small package chips to sometimes as little as 4 types. I mean, at one point we were down to like 70 bags of chips in the store, and I mean, we go through well more than that in a day, waiting for our next delivery. So there's been weird just hiccups in the supply chain, and every time I think, oh man, maybe we're getting close to the end of it, there'll be another, all of a sudden a bottled product across the country, bottled soda product and drink product is all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, it's been a problem for a couple of months. And so there's just these weird, periods of time. Chicken was a problem for a while for us. Produce has been more of an issue of quality, because the fields can pick early or late to try to balance demand out pretty quickly. But when they do that, it has direct impact on quality, either overripe or underripe products. So we've not struggled as much on the produce side, other than maybe a day or two. But the rolling outages that last or our struggle for like a month at a time, those have tended to be in, I mean, paper products like soup bowls and cups all of a sudden were a problem for 2 months, you know. And it's out of nowhere, so you don't see it coming in. All of a sudden you're like, wait, I can't order napkins for the next 3 weeks? Like, why? And so, and it almost every time I've asked the question of our supply chain, it goes back to, oh, such and such a factory had to be closed due to either a COVID outbreak or just an overall general shortage of employees. So every turn when I try to follow back to see where the problem was at, it's always been staffing related.
So with, I don't know how you accommodate pre-ordering when the fleet's going to go out, you know, that puts a massive amount of product going out your doors that's not available to the general consumers. How do you foresee that being a problem this summer?
No, not in terms of ordering what we need and having the what we need. My largest 911 concern is the people to be able to put those products in place and the people to be able to deliver the service of business critical, to check out, to be able to box it, to be able to deliver it. That's alarming. As I sit here in May, I I've been talking. Have you seen that movie, Don't Look Up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you, Dan? Mm-hmm. On Netflix. It's a very, very good movie. And it's an analogy that I use in the store that we've got a looming problem, and it's coming at us, and it's really real. And the moral I took out of the storyline was just ignore the problem. It really isn't real if you ignore it, but it was real, meaning don't look up.
Yeah.
And I'm choosing to be that person that looks up, and there's a real problem, and it's coming at us real fast. And whatever the solutions are, I don't know what the solutions are going to be to what you said. I am very, very worried about the salmon season, our ability to deliver. And I tell my staff, I don't know what the result is. Well, I do. It's the result of all the effort that I put into it and everybody else puts into it. And if it falls short, it doesn't mean that that effort wasn't real. It just fell short. So the end result to any problem is the result of the effort and dedication that you put into it. I'm worried about it, though.
And I worry about ourselves and our employees. I mean, our coworkers, they want to feel success in their jobs. And so when you get to that point where you do fail at something, or we fail in not providing the customer service that I would like to see us provide, and a customer complains to us, I'm glad that they do, so we can address that. But oftentimes, it's a result of employees that are just tired and worn out. Many of them work in multiple jobs, so those multiple jobs are all providing pressure on them, right? And so, I hope that, and many people are in Kodiak, but I hope that our community can be patient with all of us in retail business in town as we struggle to figure out how to meet their needs. You know, it's when you travel, for example, and you go into a hotel, hotels have changed tremendously in the last 2 years in regards to what kind of service we expect as a consumer. And so, anyways, I hope our local community can be patient with our retail businesses across all the varying spectrums of it, because those individuals are working hard, and I don't think any one of them chose to have things be as stressful as they have been the last 2 years. And I respect them a ton for staying in the workforce, those that have, and keep working away day after day after day after day. So I really appreciate them.
Yeah. Okay. So do you, Mike, do you have any tips for us in Kodiak for navigating around any problems we're experiencing due to these hiccups in supply chain?
I think Dan just alluded to it. Patience. If we as an operator, I don't wake up in the morning with the intent to fail at all. But failure at some level is becoming more and more of a real issue, but it's not on purpose. And so when we do fall short, as we have, and we will, because of issues outside my control, immediate control, we're doing everything that we can do. I think all of us are. Mm-hmm. And our community is probably one of the most patient communities I've ever lived in, longest community I've ever lived in. But I think Dan alluded to it, just patience. These people are working tirelessly to do what they do. And if they could do more, they would, as we rebuild our store and our operation and take care of the community. But patience is the one thing that I could ask as we move through a very difficult season.
Well, yeah. Both of you kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, you're in companies that have become more localized, that don't rely on the global food chain as much as some others, and that Safeway controls a lot of product, right, in the Pacific Northwest. They own fields, they do their own canning, they provide their own products, and you're talking about Subway having fields or contracts with fields that are in the Pacific Northwest. So it's a lot less than having to rely on product coming from Massachusetts or from internationally, right? I mean,
so for us, the reason we do that is actually nothing to do with COVID. we do that so that we can control every aspect of our supply chain. So we know, like, and I'm sure it's the same for Mike in most industries these days, there's labels printed on my tomato box that can tell me where that tomato box has been every step of its life, what group of people were in the field that picked that tomato. Subway has a desire to control their supply chain for food safety purposes, not necessarily COVID purposes, but for food safety purposes. We control, we have a group that controls every aspect of that. And I think any large food related business has to do that these days, just from a food safety point of view. But
I could say a little bit the opposite. Manufacturing, we don't do a lot of. We manufacture, at least in the Northwest, milk, dairy products, ice cream. We manufacture it for ourselves and competitors. We just put it in a different label. Mm-hmm. A lot of the private label items that you see in the store, a lot of them are manufactured by the brand name manufacturer. They just turn off the spigot and put a new label on the container and open up the spigot and put the other product in it. And so Procter & Gamble, be it Tide detergent, they'll make Tide all day long and then bring in the Kroger jugs and turn the Tide spigot back on and fill them up and so on and so forth. It goes that way with canned vegetables. But in terms of our producing, we bottle water and we a lot of dairy products. And that's about the extent of our manufacturing within the company. Therefore, we contract throughout the company. And really, that's kind of out of my wheelhouse. I'm at the tail end of it, but in terms of produce, it's virtually all contracted with strict regimens of mm-hmm. what that product's going through, cold chain, et cetera, and all for the right reasons of food safety.
But when you order from Anchorage, mm-hmm. or you order from, okay.
Now, our supply source is our warehouse is based out of Auburn and Anchorage, and then we deal with a lot of what we call direct delivery vendors, where we buy the product direct from individuals, and sometimes they'll come in and stock it, and a lot of times we'll take care of it ourselves. So all those entities in the supply chain will hub into one of our warehouses, Auburn. We have some in Tracy, California, and in Anchorage, and then that's where they consolidate the goods that we would bring into the store for efficiency.
And for us, U.S. Foods consolidates Subway product in Alaska. So U.S. Foods brings that. It used to be Food Service of America, but then U.S. Foods took over. So that product is, the supply chain is managed by Subway, but ultimately is carried out on this end by U.S. Foods for us.
Didn't you have to increase a lot of the airplane traffic, though?
We did. Yeah. We did. And we wouldn't hesitate to put something on an airplane if we had to. I work with a good group of supportive people that don't really have to ask the why or how comes. But there, I reflect on it often. There was that one, I want to think it was a 6-day period of time back in March where we chartered, I lost track, 7, 8, 737s, and sometimes they were passing each other in the air just to get product to the island, because what had happened at that time was we couldn't recover from it on two container ships. We just couldn't do it. And the sad part about that time is as we were placing orders, I get a call from the warehouse. We'd ordered literally everything that we could, and it wouldn't barely fill a half airplane. That's all that was available at the time. But those were then. We're dealing with the issues of the day of maintaining operations and keeping our customers and community taken care of.
Well, let's close with the big issue in the room, which is employees and the difficulty that you're both having getting new employees and retaining people.
Retaining people has not been a challenge in that, other than as I described earlier, where just the challenge of, you know what, if I can go into a workforce that pays similar money or even less, but has a little less stress, open less hours, things of that nature. We're seeing transition in that arena. I'm just not seeing people applying for jobs for a variety of reasons. I have numerous thoughts on that, but we've got a lot of people just exit the workforce entirely across the country. So it's a trickle down. You know, you have somebody at a higher level job, retires early because they just don't want to deal with everything and they're already retirement age, so they exit out of the workforce. Somebody's got to come up and fill that gap, and as people come up and fill that gap, they just keep coming up from each layer, and it took a little while, but as people come up and keep filling, then the entry level jobs, like the ones that I'm hiring for, where people are starting out into the workforce, there's just getting to be fewer and fewer people. They can skip the step of working at McDonald's or Subway or something of that nature and go straight to being a bank teller. Whereas before, banks wanted to see somebody that had job experience, showed that they could show up on time and all of those just very basic job skills. Due to shortages at every level of the employee supply chain, so to speak, I believe they're often able to, an employee is able to just kind of skip that entry level step, and which can be really great for an employee, but can be really difficult in the service sector. So that's just my thoughts on it.
You walk up to Safeway and you can't help but not notice all those billboards on the side of the building with help wanted at about 100 different positions, it looks like.
Yeah, and they've been up for the better part of a year, year and a half. You know, we're experiencing turnover, people wearing out, stepping aside, taking different job opportunities. If it's one thing we've had to be successful with on Kodiak Island is self-sustained, I think that generates us in life and in business too. If a problem's gonna get fixed, we need to fix it right here on the island. So we've been able to, over my tenure, is develop within and develop skill sets from the person that just came in for the first day, that within a period of time, that person has developed skill sets of processing meat and pork and poultry into a finished product, or decorating a cake, or crafting a sandwich, which Dan knows well about. All the things that it takes time to develop that skill. And as people in those areas choose different career paths or, you know, stepping aside, we've not been able to keep pace with building that skill set. Layers of redundancy, that's what I like to call it. At times when we've been most successful as an operation, we've had two, maybe three layers of redundancy. We've got all the people that we need, now we're working with the level underneath and the level underneath that. So we've never really experienced throughout the store, wall to wall, journeyman skilled staff ability issues as we are now. And I shared earlier, I don't wake up in the morning with the thought, I'm going to fail today. No, there's obstacles and they need to be overcome. And if it falls short, it's not because we didn't try. And as we speak right now, I've got people working and developing and bringing people along. It's just going to take longer than what we thought.
That's a good point. In regards to training, it's hard when you're desperately in need of people. The amount of time we would have taken to train somebody all of a sudden is getting eclipsed by, I actually need you to be functioning in that position tomorrow, and I'm really sorry, I know you started yesterday, and that's so unfair. But I am pushing people through training so much faster than I ever would have before, which on the other side ends up creating challenges, just because they don't necessarily always have enough training to fail us often. We all fail in life at times. I think be quick to acknowledge it, apologize for it, and move on. You know, like Mike said, you don't wake up hoping to, but it happens sometimes. And so I worry that I put my employees, my coworkers in a position where there's a greater risk of failure in providing great customer service if I have to train them too quickly, just because they don't have all the skills they need to provide the excellent customer service I want them to. And so trying to be patient with them as they grow, realizing that I'm pushing them way, way, way too fast. But I don't know what else to do.
It's an expensive town to live in, as we all know. Is money an issue in developing new employees? Is that one of the barriers that you see of bringing new people into the workplace, or is it a combination of money and something else?
I would think the applicant and the employee is more in charge of their own destiny as we sit than at any other time. And not that they shouldn't be. I work to make a living for my family. Everybody does. But I think the individual is more in control of the direction of where they go. So the economic factor of that is they're an associate is a commodity, and we're all vying for that same commodity. So it turns into compensation. And it's real. I don't know what the solution is. We're doing things that if you'd asked me 2 or 3 years ago, we'd be doing what we're doing right now. No, not at all. And the things that we're doing right now, that when I made the decision to do them, I didn't get a lot of support outside of the store. But I didn't want to be in a situation where I think I might be in right now. I didn't do enough, or I did not enough, and I waited too long. Don't look up, right? I didn't want to have that scenario or that situation. So it was sometime in March when I made the decisions of what we were going to do to try to address this problem, not knowing if I could fund it, which we will always write checks to pay our bills. If it didn't get the result that it needed, then I either waited too long, or I didn't do enough, or I didn't solve the problem. But then it just turns into chapter two of how to fix the problem.
I think for me, there's the money side of it. I don't know what is the right wage that would cause people to increase the frequency at which they apply at Subway or Safeway or any other retail industry. I know that in my employees, and I would say the exact same for Mike's just from watching them as a customer, our employees work extremely hard. And if you have never worked in retail, I would encourage you to try working a 10-hour day on your feet, take a 15-minute break and just keep going and be lined out the door your whole day and know that tomorrow you're gonna get up and do the exact same thing. I don't think a lot of people appreciate how hard retail can be. So anyways, it's hard to know how much you have to pay. You're trying to find a certain type of person, the person that loves a busy day, that likes interacting with people, that doesn't want to sit and kind of have their day slowly go by. Like they want the action packed. I mean, that's not every person that comes in the door. I know I have a lot of people that kind of look at Subway and go, it's an entry level job. Like anybody can do it. And I'm here to say that's not the case. And I think probably a lot of people would say similar things about Mike's employees, but I've never worked in a grocery store, but I can 100% guarantee that's not the case. It is hard work, and all the while expected to do that with a pleasant smile on your face and yes, ma'am, no, sir, what can I do to make your day better? That's not found in many other areas other than direct retail sales. And so, anyways, I'm not sure what the right price is to cause somebody to leave the relative comfort to join that. I love that type of work environment. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but I realize I may not be normal in that regard.
Well, is there a solution?
How do you find people like that?
Is there a solution? Yeah, that's what I'm asking. I mean, it sounds like 2 years in, you're both short significant amount of employees. Mm-hmm. 2 years from now, without more people coming in to apply, do you see your business operating in the same fashion? I mean, how do we solve that and put more people in the workforce?
I don't know that I have the direct answer to that. It's a topic. The whole conversation is a topic way outside the room, the island, the mm-hmm. state. It might be even be a global topic. How it changes the industry. I know who I work for, the company. We're here for a reason. We're here to, as a company, to generate sales that ultimately end up with whatever residual amount of percent of that turns into profit. And that's my job. I recognize that. But I don't come to work. I know that's my responsibility, but I don't come to work with the thought that that's what I'm here to do today. What I'm here to do today is to develop people and deliver a product and take care of our community. Do those things and it takes care of the business side of it, and then I have to put the business hat on and figure those things out. But without those core functionalities, personally, I would think the ultimate solution is and could be that we have to rethink how we come to business, how we come to market. Do I need to carry 200 different flavors of yogurt that all require different levels, no, the same level of very extreme labor to be able to deal with it? Or do we do some SKU rationalization? Do we have to offer the meat options that we have in all of its totality to twisted chicken breast ready for a fajita, or are we going to streamline the operations? That's way out of my wheelhouse. It would allow us to better be able to come to market with the team that we have and that we're building, and maybe we can build back up to that. When we had all those offerings, we had the staff to be able to deal with it. We're still trying to maintain all those little intricacies without the developed people to do it or the quantity of people to do it. And that's where failure starts to happen. We can't hold it up.
I'm laughing because there's a great book called Paradox of Choice. And it's this idea that more choice makes for a better life. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, the premise of the book is that, no, it just complicates our life. So, and I was laughing because I literally was in Pennsylvania, ate at a sandwich shop. In the sandwich shop, every sandwich was the same price. You could have lettuce, tomato, onions, Miracle Whip, and whatever meat you chose. That was it.
That was it.
Crazy busy, excellent sandwich. I don't like Miracle Whip. I don't love onions. I was like, whatever. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And then I think about Subway with, you know, 12 different sauce options and 9 different vegetables and 17 different bottled products. And you're like, wow, we have the paradox of choice. We have made life extremely complicated just on something as simple as going to Subway to have lunch versus what that little sandwich shop did that was like, would you like bottled water, one of 2 bottled sodas? And literally, we're crazy, crazy busy. And their employees, we're just having fun laughing because, you know, you're not thinking about a ton of stuff when your focus is, I got 3 ingredients, you know, kind of it was a take it or leave it type deal. And anyways, with Mike, way outside of my wheelhouse, but I look at it and go, we have a lot of choice in our country.
Oh, my. There's certain aisles down there that I don't even want to go down, you know, because there's too many things to look at.
It's overwhelming. You go into Safeway and you got to decide. I didn't even know I had to decide which was my favorite type of refried beans, you know, or which type of black beans do I prefer?
And they're in 2 aisles now.
So, anyways, I can only imagine the amount of SKUs that you deal with, Mike. It's just insane.
And the yogurt is out of control.
It is out of control.
Let me tell you.
Now, it's fun. I think. I can speak for, we love our industry, but it's also certainly gotten harder. There's no doubt about it. So I just hope more people will decide to enter into our industries and find the enjoyment that I've found in it, at least. So.
Once again, I cannot thank you enough for coming in and talking, both of you.
Pleasure.
It's always fun.
It's always nice to see you out and about in the community, and I know that people very much appreciate what you do. Mm-hmm. And taking time out to come in and talk to the community is a huge blessing for all of us. And I thank you for your time. I know you're busy guys.
And well, Mike's probably headed to run a register, and I'm headed to make sandwiches. So,
wait, what do we got? We have a question.
Yes, we do.
Hopefully, it's an easy one.
You want to interpret it for us, Pam?
Well, I knew you were closing, so what are you doing about management positions? Are you having difficulties with management positions? How do you handle that in your hiring? How are you handling the housing situation? Has COVID sort of increased problems with that area as well? Does that make sense?
I would never turn away an applicant with managerial skills because they know the arena if it's managerial skills. Anything to do with retail or wholesale, I would never discount that skill set. I'm working with a person right now that came to us that was a department operation manager for a competitor that ultimately ended up being a store director in a different type of operation. But we're working with that person to learn if they have the skill set, we can show them the way. We do struggle at times, as we are now, with department manager positions becoming available, and that always hurts. But that's where the continued goal of layers of redundancy that we've wavered on in the last few years by elements, I would say, outside of our control, that we're continuing to rebuild. It's a constant thing.
Yeah, for my managers, I've those I would prefer to hire from within. I would consider, certainly, if they've had other retail type experience. I get concerned when I find people that are interested in management positions outside of the general industry, meaning they haven't either worked as a management in a grocery store type environment or food type environment, simply because in our industries, or at least the way we choose to run them or have to run them, our managers are very hands-on. They're not sitting behind a desk giving instructions and directions. My expectation of a manager is that if you walked in, you wouldn't see much difference between the manager and the average employee in that arena, because they'd be working that hard. And if I told you, oh, that's the manager, you'd be, wait, that person's working awful hard for being the manager. That's the reality, at least of the industry that I'm in. So I've often found it easier to hire from within for those positions. And then I struggle a little bit. I'm not real hung up on titles. And so my goal has always been, if I can train each of my employees to be qualified to run a Subway somewhere else, that would be my goal. And we've had some success with that as people have moved. I would prefer to just keep them and not lose them to another Subway. But anyway, so I haven't had as hard a time with management level. It's been more those people coming in, starting out.
I'm going to make an assumption that mostly you're dealing with locals that are coming in looking for a job, and that you may have the opportunity to look at people that are outside that are going to move into the community. So yeah.
We've done that in the past, brought in, and it's been a prideful thing. As I look at our staff levels that we have right now, there's only two people that have ever worked, working for me right now, that have ever worked in any other operation other than here, only two. And in all the years that I've worked here, I probably have less fingers on my hand of people we've imported from other operations to do what we do. So therefore we're homemade. And I prefer that. I prefer developing people that have a vested interest in the community, because we are a family. I refer to our staff, the coworkers, associates. I don't like to use the word employees as much as I used to, because we're a family. And I depend on my family members personally, and I depend on my family members professionally, and I want them to feel my role in the store is I am the leader. I have to enforce, I have to deliver, I have to do a lot of things, but I want everybody that I work with to know that I'm part of this family too, first and foremost.
Is the second part of that question relevant to either of you, of housing allowances?
Not to me.
No.
I mean, the housing challenge in Kodiak is very real, and it's getting harder. Probably a discussion for an entirely different time. Mm-hmm. But many of my employees are, Subway is not necessarily, I mean, for some of them it's primary career, but for many of them it's a secondary career. Part of the reason the appeal of Subway, or I would assume a Safeway as well, is the broad range of different hours that people can work, so they can work offset to somebody else in their family that's working, or it works well as a second job, things of that nature. So.
Well, without more questions, we're good. Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
To all of you, go out and enjoy the sunshine.
All right.
You got to jump and run again. You got to hide it, hide it, hide. The old man is down the road.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of The Long Haul, our new program focusing on the long-term effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on the Kodiak community. The Long Haul is a joint production of the Kodiak History Museum and KMXT. It will be heard monthly here on KMXT going into the spring. Check our Facebook page or our website, kmxt.org, for more information on upcoming shows and topics. If you have ideas or guest suggestions for future shows, send an email to longhaul@kmxt.org or call the station or the Kodiak History Museum. Have a safe and pleasant day tomorrow. We're all in this together.